Friends, as the first speaker pointed out, the subject of our lecture today is learning to be childlike. What it is to be childlike? In order to know that, we need to distinguish between childish and childlike. In vernacular language, we have words like balish, bacche jaisa, balak buddhi. These are the words which show that childish is a word which is associated with, or it is really giving the implication of something negative, something which is not approved of. Even in a child, we do not really approve of it, but we bear with it because it is a child. But certainly, if as an adult, if we do or act like child in that respect, it would certainly not be considered childlike. Whereas childlike is that which is associated with some positive things in child. For instance, we know the impulsiveness of child. Child doesn't think, always acts impulsively. Child is impatient. Child is also ziddi, hatti, or adamant. Generally, we do talk about strihat and balahat. So, there is in fact the Akbar Birbal story in which we are told. Birbal is late in attending the king's court, and Akbar, as usual, is very angry. Why are you late? And Birbal tells him that my son wouldn't allow me to come. He was stopping me. And Akbar said, I can't buy this. You, an intelligent man, you can't manage a child. So Birbal said, Phir jana jahapana, I'll become child, you become my father. Let's see if you can handle me. So, okay. The first thing he asks is, bring a cow here and now in this very court. So Akbar manages to get a cow there. Now I want to drink the milk of the cow. So they milk the cow and then they give him milk. He takes a few sips and says, now put back the remaining milk back into the cow. Now how to do that? So the king says, be reasonable. How can you put this remaining milk back into the cow? I said, put it back into the cow. And he would just not listen. And finally, when Akbar gets angry, he starts crying loudly. And Akbar says, okay, I agree, I can't handle this. This, of course, is an extreme case. Children don't make a demand like that. But sometimes, I mean, it's a very, very usual scene to be seen, to the embarrassment of the parents. A child wants what he wants. Come what may, he creates such a ruckus, a scene somewhere on the road. He will be literally rolling on the ground in the sand and make himself dirty, but he wants something, whether it is ice cream, toy, movie, whatever it is. He is not ready to let go of it. You see? Now, as an adult, if you do so, we say, bacche jaisi baat mat karo. You see? We don't approve of it. So this is not the quality which we say it's childlike. So there is something different to be childlike. All these which we are in a way narrating as childish is something which is leading to or showing to be immature. Immaturity is what you see when you behave in a childish way. And one of the things which you see in an immature behavior is when people don't act their age. Age of 60, age of 70, age of 75, 80, and people still want to look young, wear and do things which young people do. And there again, you see a different kind of childishness, which is again immaturity. So the word childishness would be something which is equated with immaturity. What is it to be really young? Young is youthful outlook which you have. You have vivaciousness, you have zest for life. You may have gone through a lot of trouble in your life, but you still are welcoming what life has to bring. You are ready to take life head on. Remain cheerful, remain enthusiastic, don't lose your vigor for life. That is a positive connotation. But that doesn't mean that I do all that which young people are doing, speak like them, act like them, and so on and so forth. That would again become childish or immature. And to that extent, we can also see, till you reach ripe old age, your desires are not under control. You are still wishing and wanting things which are worldly, worldly pleasures, lots of material things which you want to hold on to. Sometimes you see when a person dies, lots of unwanted things people have to get rid of because they just do not have the heart to throw away or give away anything. You see, you are holding on to the material possessions, you are holding on to so many things, so many pleasures, so many kinds of food, so many kinds of clothes, you still want to enjoy over and over again. This also is a kind of immaturity. We have to grow out of it. So we act our age. It's not expected that at a certain age you continue to have this kind of a possessiveness about things. And that's why I think St. Paul has to write like this, which is very symbolic. When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. I put away childish things when I became a man. And we don't seem to put away childish things. It's not as if I want toys now, or it is not as if I'm going to be very naive like a child. But these are in a different sense that we are being childish, maybe in a spiritual sense. So, Mulk Raj Anand has a very nice story. Very simple, unless you go deeper. It's called Lost Child. And as the title suggests, the story is very simple. Bachcha mele mein kho gaya. The child is lost in the village fair. There is a village fair and the whole of the village is all excited because maybe once in so many months there is a fair there. And everybody is looking forward to it. People are dressed up, moving on the way. So on the way, the child, of course, is all excited more than anyone. There are lots of fields, corn fields, wheat fields, and obviously there will be different kinds of flowers and very beautiful butterflies. The child is excited. He wants to explore. He wants to, you know, possess things. So he will run after a butterfly, stray away from parents, running after, trying to catch a butterfly, trying to go and pluck a beautiful flower. Every time he goes away, every time mother or father goes, brings him back. And the sentence keeps repeating in the story, come child, come. Come child, come. That's what the parents keep telling the child again and again. Bringing him back and saying, come child, come. You have gone away from our usual path. So the child follows. They enter the mela and as usual, it's very, very attractive things are there. He wants to buy some mithai. Parents can't afford to buy. A little ahead, he's all excited to see very beautiful, colorful balloons. Parents obviously can't buy. Then there is a snake charmer. And then comes a merry-go-round. This time the child sees a big crowd there. He is extremely excited. For the first time, he has seen something going round like that, some other children sitting there. And he's decided. So he goes, runs ahead of everyone, tries to go close, and then determines, this is something I'm going to put my foot down and tell my parents, I'm going to sit on this merry-go-round. And as he turns back to tell the parents that he is going to ride the merry-go-round, he sees the parents are not there. The parents are not there. So then, he's frantically now searching for parents. He's looking here and there, not finding them in the big crowd. He starts crying. And a very kind person sees the child crying, takes hold of him and says, what? What has happened? And then says, come, we will search for them together. But the child keeps crying. He's inconsolable. So the first this man feels, let me put him, pacify him, bring him in a good state, then we'll go and search for the parents. So, in order to pacify him, they go around in the mela, pass through those very shops where the mithai is sold and says, tell me, which one do you want? The child shakes his head. I want my mother. I want my father. Next shop, some toys are there. Which one do you want? And what he wanted is of no consequence now. I want my mother. I want my father. Move ahead. Finally offers merry-go-round ride. I want my mother. I want my father. Story ends here. Come to think of it, there is nothing except to show that sometimes how children really want something and they don't get, and so disappointed they could get, but in the process such a hadsa can happen. I don't think Mulkaraj Anand would write a story just to drive home a point, which we see in many Hindi movies. The child and the mother are separated in a fair invariably, and so on. So the critics have given a deeper and a very nice understanding of the story. What they say is, we are the children. And dunya, the world, is a fair. Is it not a fair? In the fair you have things which are very attractive. There are always some things which we want. And so also, from the time we are born, we have been wanting and we have been attracted to possess so many things. As children, we wanted new shoes, new clothes, new toys. As you grew up, you wanted a new water bag, you wanted a new school bag, and you wanted new shoes. As you grew up, you wanted to have a certain degree, and then a certain job, and then a car, and a certain brand of mobile phone, and then a flat, and on and on and on. Just like the child getting attracted to lots of things in the fair. In the fair, which is this world, we also are children only, no matter what age we reach, and are continually attracted by variety of things, to the extent that we are oblivious of parents or oblivious of other human beings. The child is oblivious of parents. We are told sometimes, and which unfortunately applies to some children today. What are parents for? You are very nice, mama. You bought me this thing. They will hug the mummy, father, when they buy something. So mother and father, for the child in the fair, were important because he was constantly pointing out things, buy me this, buy me that, buy me that. And those things were far more important than the companionship of the parents. But when the parents were not there, they became important. So they say it was like a rebirth for this child. It's a beautiful thought. Yes, even for this child there was a rebirth. So far, his whole attention and world was the fair with a variety of things. The moment the separation comes from parents, the whole birth is taken, is away, a change in consciousness. Something else has become important. For the first time, the value of parents is seen. Isn't that something we keep hearing and experiencing today? May not be parents, but someone in your life. Maybe wife, maybe children, maybe something else. Someone especially who quietly stands by you, supporting you in all your endeavors, quietly bearing all your idiosyncrasies, and not demanding anything. And suddenly, with a race you are in, achieving this, achieving that, you find one fine day this person is gone. And then comes the same turnabout as it came about for this child. Where is that Miss So-and-so, Mr. So-and-so? And suddenly, that money, that new flat, all those possessions become fika. They've lost their value. They don't give you. It's not attracting you anymore. They've lost their charm. So, this is one thing. Take it at another level. The childishness, which is our spiritual immaturity in a way, taken to a higher level, we are all children of light, as the Theosophy School poem reminds us. Children of light. And who is our parent? It is that divine light. It is that divine presence. So, some Fridays back we had seen that there is the mind in us with which we think, with which we are looking at the world, with which we are enjoying and suffering, that mind, which the Buddhists call as everyday mind, is a child of something divine in us. Call it reincarnating ego, call it higher mind, call it soul, whatever it is, of which this is a ray. Because that ego cannot directly come in contact with the world. So it is through this ray, the child, the mind, that it is functioning. And that mind functioning through the body. As soon as it enters the body, it forgets its divine origin. It forgets its parent. Just as we grow more and more, we tend to forget our human relations. So also, this mind forgets its divine origin, the divine parent, and gets identified. Starts saying, I am so and so, with such and such a degree, this, that and the other, and I want this and I want that, I like this, I don't like that, and so on. Here also, there is a link the mind has with the parent. And that link is called antahkaran. That antahkaran is the bridge. It is a consciousness which connects the lower animal consciousness of our mind with the higher divine spiritual consciousness, which is of our divine parent. So now and then we see the parent is guiding, just like now and then when the child is in a receptive mood, these days we have to see that. Then the parent can say something and they might receive. So also we are no better. Most of the time we are in our own world, very happy with what we are doing. But now and then the parent is managing to give, speak to us as voice of conscience and guide us, and we are guided. But just as a child, and that's the imagery given in the voice of the silence, just as a child who is holding the hand of the parent, they are walking on one side of the road. Suddenly, and this happens many times, the child sees something on the opposite end of the road, something very attractive. Maybe he has spotted some nice dress, some shoes, some toy. Now he wants it. He has to have it. So starts pulling the parent to go on that side. And if the mother is very, or the father is very firm, they won't be easily dragged because he is pulling the hand. Then what does the child do? He will break loose and let go of the grip and run himself to be on the other side of the road. He can meet with an accident. This is what happens. And so beautifully in the voice of the silence we are told that there is the bridge, antahkarana, which is a silver thread. It is called silver thread, which binds you to your divine parent. But when waxing strong, when some desire takes hold, possession of our mind, we want what we want. It could be money. For someone, it could be the line of life's meditation. I may have enough money, but I want to be still richer person and still richer person because I want this, that and the other. How can I manage in this so many lakhs? I want so many more lakhs. And then comes a time, like a foolish, reckless child running across, temporarily losing grip or the support of the parent. This person also does something foolish, takes bribe, does something wrong, gets money, gets caught, has to be in the prison or something else. It is then the awakening comes, like the child meeting with an accident. And then the awakening comes, there is again a possibility of repenting, and the divine parent, like good parents, loving parents, they are able to make once again the connection with the divine parent. But what if this keeps repeating? You are widening it. You are overstretching the string. A time comes when the string breaks. No more can you have the support and guidance of the divine nature. And that, I think last Friday we were told, is a lost soul. A lost soul is a person who has no hope now. of getting any connection back with the divine in him. This is the ultimate which can happen. This is the ultimate childishness, you can say. Too much attraction till a very ripe old age, or a certain years and age is passed, and yet we are attracted only with the worldly things and material things. We are being spiritually immature. So not for nothing, we had a reading from the chapter called The Fool. But interestingly, the original Pali or the Sanskrit is called Balavago or Balavarga. Can you imagine that? It's called Balavarga, and why is it not translated as the child? No, it is called the fool. Someone who is a spiritually yet a child, abhi to bachcha hai. If a child says, I want to enroll myself in army, you will say, abhi to bachcha hai. It's the same thing. Spiritually, he is still at an ignorant, at an immature stage. And we are being told by Buddha that who is a spiritually ignorant and a childish and a foolish person? Who doesn't even know that the world is ruled by law? Who doesn't even know the meaning and purpose of life? And therefore, he thinks, eat, drink and be merry, enjoy yourself, and that's what life is for. This is still a sleeping person. These are all sleeping people. These are all childish people. And many of us might be falling in that category. And this is what the childishness with Buddha talks about. Now, then, what is it to be childlike? Childlike are those characteristics which you admire in child. What you see about child first is his innocence. Child is very innocent. And that innocence includes things like not having any kind of malice for another person. It includes great amount of frankness and truthfulness. One thing which I think the student is very enamored of in a child is the innocence where this keeps happening, no? Child wants to say something. Mother has trained the child to say, don't speak when two adults are speaking. Always say, excuse me, I want to say something. And the child, you will see, will say it many times. Excuse me, mama. The mama says, keep quiet. Mama is talking to someone. The child urgently wants to say something. We could break, unless it is something very important, and maybe listen to, but this will not. Sometimes adults are really hard-pressed. They are really worked up about something. And sometimes plainly they ignore. And finally the child gets a good shouting, a slap, or for some other reason. But the beautiful part of it is, he will start crying, or he is not talking to you. And then just give a chocolate or speak nicely. As the ad shows, the child is very, very cross with someone, and then they bring a plate of jalebi, and all that is gone. He runs, jalebiya. So cute. This simple the child is. It doesn't happen with adults. You can count on many days before the adult comes back online and on talking terms. But the child will hug you in no time. There is no, doesn't allow, as it were, to register in the memory what harshness you have done to him, slap was given, nothing. This is innocence. Now this is innocence which is natural. Child cannot help but be what he is. He cannot really carry and allow it to be written down on the heart that you treated me harshly, you didn't treat me well. He can't afford to. Like a lion is ferocious and a rabbit is a little frightened kind of animal. He can't change. So also, this is what child is naturally. He's not worked for it. He can't change himself, not at least at that point in time. He's just like that. But we can inculcate in us this quality of not carrying the malice And forgive, forgive and largely forget. Can we not do that? If someone has spoken harshly, we can forget. And as if nothing has happened, with a very clean mind and heart, meet with the person so that even he will forget about the incident. This is childlike. And it's not very easy to do, to get this innocence. On the other hand, there is frankness and truthfulness, unpretentious, calling a spade, as he sees, he will say. And that's why you have this thing where this is the idea which is emphasized. We would have all read as children, the emperor's new clothes. You see, the emperor is being swindled and by the two frauds. And they say, we are going to make for you some kind of a celestial garment, some supernatural clothes. They will be wonderful and they want a lot of money. And only those people who are foolish and stupid, they will not be able to see those clothes. Rest all will be able to see. Now, they are not really making any clothes. But, of course, when the day comes, they make a show as if they are making him wear. But the king dare not say that, where are the clothes? Because then he will be proved to be foolish and stupid. So he also says, okay, maybe there are clothes which I can't see. And then he goes on the road. And we know how the whole town comes to see. Some are giggling, some are... But everybody, nobody dares to say, what is it that you are wearing? Only the child comes forward and says, the king is not wearing anything. The king is naked. Child's story. But most of the time, in the whole story, this is the point which is emphasized. The child has not so much the courage, but the frankness. The child has that frankness and truthfulness where he doesn't care. He says what he sees. Unpretentious. This is also a kind of innocence and simplicity which is there in the child. The simplicity, which very much is lacking in our world today. People show something and they are something else inside. No one is really projecting themselves to be what they are. It's very difficult these days to meet a simple person like that, so that you can take them at their face value. This is what you can hope for in a child. Another important trait of the child is unself-consciousness. Unself-consciousness. Child is not self-conscious. And it's interesting why he is not. Self-consciousness comes when you have the whole idea of self and the idea of I. And we are told that till at least the age of 7, the mind doesn't make connection with the body, and therefore the child doesn't have that sense of I for a long time, not really up to the age of 7, but a perfect I develops only after the mind has made connection and is taking hold of the body. But before that, you hear the child say, baby wants ball, Johnny wants ball, baby doesn't like this, Johnny doesn't like this, either by name or with the word baby, but he won't say, I don't like or I like this, nothing of the sort. The I is not there. And the whole of the egoism and egotism, ahankar, that also comes with this sense of I. So the carefree, in a way, or what we may call as unself-conscious, only a child can be. We are too conscious about everything. The little thing which we have done, I have done. If I am beautiful, I am too conscious about my beauty. If I sing well, I am too conscious that I sing well. If I have some degrees, I am too conscious. Because that I has now given me also ahankar or egotism. So the self-consciousness is there in the adults, which is not there in the child. But today you feel that we are inculcating that self-consciousness in them. Today they talk about what they call as helicopter parents. We are told that the child is quite all right, studying, doing as well as he can. Some are a little playful, but otherwise they do reasonably well. But who is it that is putting the idea? Look at that Nikhil of the neighbor. He gets 92% and you get only 80%. See how good he is in maths. And you, every time comparison, The whole seeds of competition and comparison. I am inferior or I am superior or I need to overtake and get the first rank or a second rank. The whole of these things about competitiveness and being superior or getting somewhere, that idea is instilled by parents even before the child could be more than 7 years of age. So he is already too self-conscious. Already too self-conscious because the adults are self-conscious about their looks, about their money, about their status, and the child is also very self-conscious about, I am a child of so-and-so and I am a child of a rich person and I am this and I am that. So, in fact, we are taking away the very beautiful qualities which are there in the child and not anymore allowing them to be childlike is another point. Forget about emulating. Probably we won't have left an example of a childlike person, a child who is childlike. So this is unself-conscious. And that is also going to give you, if you are not self-conscious, that whole sense of I-ness is not there, it also gives you humility. Humility is another quality which is supposed to be childlike. It's very interesting. The vernacular word for child is something like nanu chokru, chota bachcha, lahan mul. Everywhere the word is signifying small. Small. That's why we had a lecture on Tukaram's life. One of the abhanga, what is he saying? And all saintly people say that. Lahan pana dega deva, mungi sakrecha rava. What does he say? Give me, endow me with this childhood or childlike personality so that I can become as small and as insignificant as an ant who survives eating particles of sugar. That's all he wants. My needs will be minimum. I will not be impinging on somebody's rights. I will be a non-entity, just like an ant is there, you don't even notice. I will be like that, as opposed to what we are. We say about people, they are throwing around their weight. This man says, I don't want to have any weight at all. I'm going to be very light on people because I'm small in my ego. I'm small in my attitude. I'm going to be humble. That doesn't mean intellectually, spiritually, in power and knowledge. No. This is the fine line which Mr. Judge is talking about. He says there is a fine line between pride and humility. You should ask yourself, how can I feel so proud when I'm so small? No matter what your personality may be, you might be the PM of the country, you might be the CEO of the company, you might be anything. But there will be always someone who knows more than you. There will be always someone who has more skills than you. There will be always someone who is richer than you. So as far as the personality is concerned, you're so small. How can you be proud about being a Mr. or Miss so-and-so? And how can I be so humble when I am so great as far as your divine nature is concerned? The divine is perfect. The divine has all power, all knowledge, all wisdom. And I also have the same powers of kartum, akartum, anyatha kartum. I can change myself from what I am. I can become a Buddha, I can become a Jesus. The perfectibility is there in me. And that is the whole idea. That is what is the true humility, which they are asking. They are not saying, make me simple and stupid, like child who doesn't understand really half the things. But make me, let me have the attitude of a child towards all that I possess. I may be great, but let me not feel great. And if I am that, then I won't be crushed out. As the same Tukaram says, Mahapure zade jati, tethe lavale vachti. When there is a great flood or when there is a great wind, even big trees sometimes are uprooted by a high wind. But what happens to those grass and little saplings? They bend. So, I will bend when I find someone who is opposing me. I will bend when I see the life circumstances are very overpowering. I will bend, I will lie low, rather than fight with it, complain about it. This is what again becomes smallness. Smallness, insignificance. And that's why in Light on the Path we are told that the power which the disciple shall covet is that which will make him appear as nothing in the eyes of men. Mr. Judd goes to the extent of giving a blow. Many people don't like this statement. They feel, how can we really say this? Try to recollect that you are a very small affair in this world and that people around do not value you at all, and grieve not when you are not there. Your only true greatness lies in the inner true self. We always feel, will they remember me? I have done so much for people. Maybe it is for the family members, for community, for the world. There is somewhere that desire, they will miss me. Don't have that. That is a small ego somewhere, feeling that I have done something and I deserve this kind of acknowledgement after I die. He says, you are a very small affair. People come, people go. They are forgotten and the world goes on without even great beings who have come and who have gone. So that is the smallness which we are talking about. And today, luckily, interestingly, in the management world, in business, they are recognizing. So Robert Greenleaf has given the whole concept of servant leadership. It's a paradox. You should stoop to conquer. And he says that if you want to start a business or a firm, what you should do first is have in your mind only one motive: to serve. To serve humanity, to serve your employees. You are there for them. You are there for the world. You have the best interest of your employees and the world at heart. It's very difficult. But if you continue, you do not impose your ideas on people, but you are open to receiving their ideas. Your whole attitude is being open-minded, receptive, humble, not really show the knowledge you have, but try to bring out the best in the employees and anyone who comes in your life. Sometimes we do say about some people, he brings the worst out of me, and there are some people who bring the best out of you. It's just that they are so self-effacing, they are so selfless, that they don't really impose themselves on you, and that is what you need to do if you really, really want to become leaders. And then we won't read it, but that's what Tao Te King, Lao Tzu, is saying. A sage doesn't impose his ideas, his knowledge, his powers on people, and that is why people go looking for him and put him on a pedestal and say, you guide us. They make him a leader because of his lowliness and humility. So that unself-consciousness, which in a child happens to be there because it's very natural at that age, we need to develop this unself-consciousness. The ego and egotism, which HPB says is the last foe to be conquered, it is the last enemy to be really fought. But that is the enemy we should start fighting in a small way, because that's really being childlike. Another quality of childlike is carefree and cheerful. We are told that our Dattatreya, he had 24 gurus, you know, and one guru was child. He says, I see child suckling at the mother's breast. That means doodh pita bachcha. Is he really worried? Kal, will I get milk or not? Will someone really wash me, change my nappy? No care in the world. Yes, there are people who are absolutely, what Mr. Judd says, when I say carefree, I don't mean be careless. That doesn't mean be indifferent. No. Being carefree is not being anxious. Being carefree means not oscillate between the past and the future. Live in the present. It has become cliche now. Every guru will say, live in the present, live in the present. But what is that? That simply means don't go on dwelling on what has happened. Jo ho gaya, so ho gaya. Why can't we dismiss it? As HPB says, that every new year, if you keep looking back, you should take and give a lion's glance to the year which has passed. But that doesn't mean you keep dwelling. Last year I fared so badly in my studies. Last year I could not do enough for my family. Last year this happened. I made this mistake. You can't do and do justice to the present which is passing. You are wasting that time. Or the new year starts and this year I will get the promotion. This year this target will be achieved. This year, we never say that this year I make up my mind that I will not shout at anyone or not lose my temper or this year I will see to it. No, such expectations are not there, but some other worldly expectations. So what happens? You can't be carefree. You are anxious all the time. The child is cheerful because it is carefree, and carefree because it is the nature. He can't help. He can't help but be carefree, and so he's so cheerful. He emits and oozes out some magnetism which attracts all of us to the child. There is certain kind of purity also around the child. The last quality we would say which is there around the child is vulnerability. Vulnerable. What is vulnerable? Open to harm. A newborn baby is there. Anything to anything can happen if there is no one to take care. Some animal can bite the body of the child. Someone can really beat the child. He can really catch cold. Anything can happen. He is absolutely open to harm. Child is extremely vulnerable. Now we are told that you should also try to imitate the child and be vulnerable. We won't believe it. But this is considered to be one of the most important of spiritual qualities. Next to humility, if there is something, we are asked to become vulnerable. Vulnerable, which means that you have to be as unprotected as a child, and we want all the protection. Physically, intellectually, emotionally, I don't want to be hurt in any way. And I am very touchy. I feel hurt very quickly, emotionally, intellectually, and physically also. So physically we would say, and right now lots of things happening in America, and people still want to carry gun or knife or something. It's become very common. You don't know. Let's learn karate. Because we are so vulnerable. Anything can happen. We are not saying that on the practical ground we will agree or disagree. But from spiritual point of view, if you go to see, nothing of the sort. Physically also, try to be vulnerable. Make small beginnings. And Buddha will go to the extreme and tell his disciples, if you are passing through a jungle, you are bound to meet some robbers, and if they are too bad, they will catch you and they won't get anything from you. They will get angry and they will take a saw and start moving the saw on your head. The monks are supposed to be shaven. So imagine on the skull, if someone is moving the saw, what pain you will experience. And he says, at that time, you listen, my disciples. There should be no anger in you, no cursing, no complaint. The only thought that should come is, they are creating such bad karma for themselves. How sad that the man is creating such bad karma. That's the only feeling and thought that should come in you. This is what Light on the Path in a way says. Slowly you begin. It says, what is it when you have to be vulnerable, a disciple? You should throw away all the weapons of offense and defense. You will not attack, but also if someone attacks you, you will not retaliate or have some weapon to really defend yourself. It could be a physical attack. It could be intellectual attack. A very cutting and a biting speech, degrading you, insulting you. This is an attack, and I want to retaliate immediately by shouting louder or making a still more ironic speech and all that. I want to do that. Emotionally hurt. Something is said and you feel, now what do I say to this person? Something is said about your weakness in such a manner that you are really cut to size, as they say, and you are emotionally hurt. But why does this all happen? Go back again to the same thing. Personality. The personal element is so strong in us, and the personal element is completely missing in the child. So ultimately what? The personality has to slowly disappear. And so all weapons of offense and defense must be dropped. All individual rights and insistence upon this is my right and I must get it must be dropped. All sense of self-respect, swabhiman, should be dropped. And what does it say? It's very interesting that it should come in a book which is a mystical book. What does it say? It says, he who believes himself wise or in any way superior to his fellow men is incapable of discipleship. A man must become as little as child before he can enter into the kingdom of heaven. Before that it says, from that ceremony of giving up all the weapons, he returns into the world as helpless, as unprotected as a newborn child. So there is a phase at which you are required to achieve this. And don't think this is all foolishness. There is another strength which will come. Unlike the child, the spiritual man is become like a child. He has effaced his personality. He has become innocent. He has become vulnerable. And yet he carries the strength. The strength which no weapon will also have to protect. We never think like that, you know. I know karate, I can see. What if someone really comes from behind and then just shoots you? What karate are you going to do? You have a gun in your hand and someone is too smart, just takes the gun away from you, and what are you going to do? And so on. There are ample possibilities. So what is it? The inner strength. It's this inner strength which you will develop. This is not for nothing that we are asked to be told, believe it or not. The moment you start throwing away these weapons of harsh speech, retaliating by words, retaliating in thought, cursing a person, or even physically and in action showing your displeasure, when you give up all that, what has happened? A different strength has come. We call this soul force. We call this heart force. And the beautiful example is there, which we have repeated many times, which Vaidyaji talks about. It's about the Japanese general. He was a dictator, ruthless man, battle after battle. And I think it was after Second World War that he's taken prisoner of war along with a few of his soldiers, all ruthless. Who would dare really to even go to them, leave alone talk to them? They are very ruthless people. And they are, of course, going to be hanged. There is still time. A Buddhist monk says, give me a chance. I don't want these men to die with this kind of bitterness, hatred, violence in their mind and heart. So 1 month, he goes and teaches them, preaches them Dhamma, Buddha's teachings. And there is an inner conversion. In fact, the article is called Inner Conversion of Tojo. Now, what was this strength? Was he carrying some gun with him, or was he carrying some soul force? And it's a paradox. You go down, you give up all weapons, and then comes in you the strength, which is far higher. And that's why it's Surdas who says, Nirbal ke bal Ram. Who is with you at that time? Ram? Your own higher nature. That strength which flows to you is from your own higher nature. It's very interesting that in the Mahabharata Yuddha, let's not overlook that. Both Duryodhan and Arjun go, and what does Krishna say? One hand is my great army, Akshauni army, with all weapons, all the astra sastra, and on the other hand, I alone, Nishastra, without weapon, only me. Would you ever choose that whoever Krishna is? But this, if we choose, that becomes Nirbal ke Balram. What have we done by giving up these things? we have really made that silver thread very strong, majboot. And along the silver thread, we have taken steps towards that Krishna, that Rama, that really divine being in us. And that divine being is holding your hand strong now. He will not leave you. That's what Light on the Path says. In this battle of life, you choose that gentle but fierce Krishna. And he will never leave you utterly alone. But where do we have that astha or faith in that Krishna within? So, this is what we may say are the qualities which are childlike, which we need to develop. Question may arise, should we really develop them or will they naturally come? So I think with that we continue the talk, because there is a last question there in the questions asked, very thoughtful. Can one consciously practice childlike qualities, or it becomes natural character when reached? When you reach that pure stage of mind, body and work, so do you really work for it, or do you really become childlike when you have purified your mind, your thought, etc.? What is it really? This is beautifully answered, by the way, in that one thing which is just spoken without knowing the complete context. And what is that? It is William Wordsworth's poem, which is called The Rainbow, or My Heart Leaps with Joy. And it has a line called, the child is the father of man. Very interesting. So what does he say? My heart leaps with joy when I see rainbow in the sky. That was when my life began. And that is what is still when I am a man. And that also should be when I grow into an old man, else I die. And of course he says, the child is the father of man, and then year by year, step by step, one life, one year of my life is linked with another, and that is how I carry my piety. Very deep poem, till you understand, till we understand, that is. You see, what does he say? He says that something very simple. The joy which I felt when I saw a rainbow, that joy I felt when life began, my heart leaped with joy when I saw a rainbow in the sky, and that is what happened when life began, when I was a child. It's really lovely to see a child. You light up a sparkler and you see 1, 2, 3 children, they'll be jumping and they will be just clapping their hands. It's a beautiful sight. Now what's there in this? You wonder what is there in that sparkler so much. But looking at them, you feel greater joy, because it's a pure joy which is as if the whole world has really been at their feet. That joy he must have felt. But Wordsworth is Wordsworth, a mystical poet, who says, that is what I still carry with me. That even today when I see rainbow, I feel the same joy. That shows some kind of a purity of the poet's heart. That shows some kind of a growth, which is of a very different kind. As you grow up, certain things don't really matter to you, nor really bring any. But to the poet, who sees with a different eye, it brings the same or similar pleasure. And he says, this should continue, barkarar. It should continue when I enter my old age, so that even as an old man I see rainbow, I should feel that pure joy and my heart should leap with joy once again. If it doesn't happen, I die. I'm a dead man. If I don't feel uplifted by certain things in nature, that also is the thing. Now this is very important. So what do you do to have the childlike qualities? On the one hand, what the poet is saying, both piety, that is a certain amount of purity which you have in your childhood, including this innocent joy, it must trickle down. Don't lose sight of it. Hold on to it as you grow, from your childhood to your youth, to your adulthood, to your ripe old age. Treasure those qualities, things which gave you pleasure. Treasure those characteristics which you had as a child. probably my innocence, probably my purity. If I am awake, I will say, I want to hold on to it. Just because I am 15, just because I am 19, just because I am 35, I can still be childlike. If we are aware and if we live life like that, poet maybe is only talking about the joy and pleasure of looking at rainbow, but we can be an awakened person who can say, these are the qualities as a child I had, and just because the world is going in another direction, I won't leave those qualities. I will continue to be innocent, I will continue to be carefree by having faith in the law of karma or whatever it is. I will nurture those qualities year by year by year, not lose sight of them. Then there is no need to sit and cultivate at fag end of life and realizing these are good qualities. Because all throughout, you have not lost sight of them. But another way is to really remember at one point in time those things which you were taught during your childhood. Sometimes parents, teachers take special trouble to impress upon the minds of children certain qualities. Be always truthful, my child. Be always honest, my child. Money is not everything in life, I tell you. This and that. Somewhere it gets eroded. But the seeds are lying within you. And those seeds can be made to sprout of that character which the teacher and the elder tried to build. And we can once again nurture it at some point in time. That's another way that we can. The meaning of it is also that what we are today is really, its foundation is in your childhood. So some qualities which we have carried with us, they were built in the childhood and we have carried it automatically. They are not very great qualities, and yet we have seen our father, mother being very kind, and that's the quality we have watched, copied, emulated, imbibed, and we have carried it with us. And that's why the child is the father of man. If the man is good and childlike, it's because his foundation was very good in his childhood. On the other hand, if the child has a traumatic experience, you find the adult also having some peculiarity of temperament which he doesn't know why he has. So all these things are there. And the second question says that when you are trying to be childlike, can it happen that what you experienced, the skandhas from the previous life, all that starts showing and begins to hinder? Definitely. The skandhas of your past life, the skandhas of this life, all that you did in your previous years are all going to come and hinder when you start trying to be childlike. It's not going to be an easy path at all, unless and until we have awakened very early. Right from my youth, I feel I want to have these qualities and I am going to nurture. Otherwise, all that we did in the earlier years and earlier lives, my slyness of temper, my roughness of temper, my roughness of speech, my selfishness, all that will come in the way and I can't be childlike. The first question we will quickly go through is, it is said that some age the child becomes responsible for his karma. Up to what age? And who will be responsible for his karma? What about death of the child at very early age? Does it mean that no karma for this birth is counted? This is a very, very technical question which is explained in the theosophy and theosophical literature. What about the karma of the child who dies young? At what time his karma really begins? His karma and responsibility begins at the age of 7. We just said during the lecture that the mind takes hold of the child at the age of 7, when it makes connection with the body of child. Now, what choices he makes, it will bring him some greater consequences. HPB says, children, idiots, savages, these are people who will have only physical karma, but no moral consequences. Moral consequences means if you do something wrong, you are made to realize that you had harmed the person and you will have to suffer very bitterly for that. Till you learn that this should not be done. This is called moral consequence. But physical consequence means something will happen to you physically, but not such that you are made to suffer. This is what will happen to karma of the child who is considered irresponsible up to the age of 7. What happens up to age of 7? Are the skandhas working? Definitely. Mr. Judge says that karma and skandha of the previous life are operating during 7 years of child's age. It is based on your past karma that you get a certain kind of body, temperament. Some children are very violent, some children are very timid, some children are excessively attached to things, some are very adamant, some are very kind and simple and sweet. Who gives this? The skandha, the vasanas, the sanskaras of the previous lives. And based on that, they commit some karma. And even our law recognizes that the child below 7, in fact, right up to 14 years or so, they are called juvenile. And they are not given very harsh punishment. In fact, they are put in remand homes. Reformative action is taken. The same is done by the law of karma. Shall we just put it shortly? There will not be a harsh punishment to open your eyes, to make you suffer. But yes, there will be some kind of punishment. Those who want to see, you should go back to the article, The Moral Compensation. Gives the story about the idiot boy who is killing insects and all that. But in the next life, he doesn't really severely suffer. Our time is up. Thank you.